In the first episode of this series on the dangers of the digital age, we looked at the rise and triumph of the digital environment, and then we considered a central fact about the current development of digital technology that makes it inherently dangerous to the human soul. In this second episode, I want us to reflect philosophically on the way in which digital technology, as it's currently progressing, possesses a threat to our proper humanity. The specific question I want us to consider is this: how should we think about the human condition absorbed as it is in the digital environment? Put in other terms, we might ask, in what way is the human soul perversely attuned by the digital environment? It seems to me that an especially fitting way to illustrate the perverse attunement of the human soul in the modern digital age is through an allegory given to us by a philosopher from the classical Greek age. That philosopher is Plato, who in Book 7 of Republic presents to us his allegory of the cave. Now, anyone who's ever taken an introductory course in philosophy will be familiar with Plato's cave. It is, after all, probably the most famous allegory of Western civilization. In Republic, Plato presents the allegory through the voice of Socrates. Imagine, says Socrates, human beings living in an underground cave-like dwelling, with an entrance a long way up open to the light. They have been there since childhood, their legs and necks fettered so that they are fixed, seeing only in front of them, unable to turn their heads because of the bonds. A fire burns far above and behind them, and between the fire and the prisoners there is a road, above which a low wall has been built, like the screen in front of puppeteers above which they show their puppets. Then see also men carrying along the wall all kinds of artifacts, statues of men and other living things, made of stone, wood, and every material. Socrates goes on to explain that the prisoners in such a pitiful situation could not help but believe that the truth about reality is identical to the shadows that were being cast on the wall by the artifacts. In actual fact, what the prisoners consider to be the truth about the real is doubly removed from the real. For what they believe to be true is but shadows of artifacts, and the artifacts themselves are but copies or images of real things. The shadows on the wall thus present a distorted view of reality to the prisoners that in turn cause them to have distorted beliefs about the true nature of reality. Continuing his allegory, Socrates then imagines one of the prisoners being released from his chains. The man first stands up and turns to look upon the fire blazing behind him. He is immediately blinded by the light and is unable to clearly make out the artifacts in front of the fire that were casting their shadows on the wall. Socrates explains that such a man would find it hard to believe that what he was now seeing was truer than the shadows he was accustomed to. In fact, such a man would likely wish to turn his gaze from the blinding light and look again to the shadows on the wall to which his sight was attuned. Next, Socrates imagines that this same man is forced from the cave itself and into the sunlit world above. In the full light of day, the man now becomes even more blinded and unable to see any of the real things before him. Gradually, his eyes adjust and he begins to see the truth about the real. He'd need time to get adjusted before he could see things in the world above, says Socrates. At first, he'd see shadows most easily, then images of men and other things in water, than the things themselves. Of these, he'd be able to study the things in the sky and the sky itself more easily at night, looking at the light of the stars and the moon, than during the day, looking at the sun and the light of the sun. Finally, Socrates continues, I suppose he'd be able to see the sun, not in images of it in water or some alien place, but the sun itself in its own place, and be able to study it. Now, in the immediate context of his Republic, Plato has Socrates deploy the allegory of the cave to illustrate the proper nature of education. Genuine education involves an upward journey of the soul towards those things that are true and good. The cave represents the realm of mere appearances, a place of shadows and images. To gain a true knowledge of the real, one must ascend to the things themselves, represented as the surface world outside the cave. For Plato, education is much more than the mere transfer of information. It's rather a turning of the soul from what is apparently true and apparently good to that which is really true and really good. The path of proper education should ultimately lead one to gaze upon the true and the good itself. In the allegory, this is represented by the sun, which is the source of all that is true and all that is good in everything else. Education, in its true form, is thus a kind of liberation. It's a breaking free from the bondage of false perceptions, which in turn facilitate distorted beliefs about what is actually true and distorted desires about what is actually good. There is a ready analogy here between Plato's cave and the digital environment. In fact, I'd like to suggest that the digital environment is not merely like Plato's cave. It is rather its technological embodiment. When the parallel is systematically drawn out, I think, we can see how nearly every element in Plato's story maps onto a feature of the digital environment. In Plato's cave, the prisoners are chained facing the wall. In the digital environment, users are fixed before devices. In both cases, what is offered is a limited perceptual field where mediated experiences of images replaces direct encounter with real substances in the world. In Plato's cave, the shadows are projected by firelight. In the digital environment, images, videos, and digital content are illuminated by screens. Just as the shadows on the wall are mistaken for reality, so too are digital representations mistaken for what is truly real. Both prisoner and user alike confuse the spectacle for reality. In Plato's cave, the shadows are produced by puppeteers moving objects behind the wall. In the digital environment, the content scene is curated by algorithms, influencers, and advertisers. Invisible agents on both accounts determine which shadows and images dance before our eyes. Perceptions are shaped by concealed artificers for ends utterly indifferent to the true and to the good. In Plato's cave, fire is the source of light, in the cave wall, the medium of the shadowy images. In the digital environment, the glow of a screen is the source of light, and digital technology, the medium of content. In both accounts, there is artificial illumination and mediation. In Plato's cave, physical chains keep the gaze of the prisoner fixed on the wall. In the digital environment, psychological chains of habit, addiction, and constant stimulation keep the gaze of the user fixed on the screen. Whether by external restraint or internal habit, prisoner and user alike are bound and unfree. In truth, the digital cave is far more effective at capturing and shaping our perceptions than Plato's cave could ever be. The shadows that flicker across our screens glow in high definition, and they are algorithmically tailored to our personal appetites. The digital cave has become interactive, personalized, addictive, and portable. Each of us now carries our own personalized version of Plato's cave in our pockets and take them wherever we go. We are immersed in a continuous projection of images, curated, filtered, and optimized to our own preferences. The inherent danger of Plato's cave and the digital cave is the same: the perverse psychological attunement of our perceptions. Digital media don't just inform, they form perceptions by repetition, framing, effective cues, and reinforcement. They teach us what is to be admired, pitied, mocked, or desired. Our passions are cultivated by the media. Our likes and dislikes, values and opinions, and what we consider to be right and wrong are shaped by habit and by culture. Algorithms have become our educators. Like Plato's prisoners, we too are becoming disoriented, away from the truth about what is real and what is good. And as a result, our souls are becoming disordered. I can see three ways in which the digital environment is disorienting and disordering us away from the good. The digital environment is distracting our intellects. In his 1936 poem titled Burnt Norton, the poet T.S. Eliot could describe the modern condition as distracted from distraction by distraction. This distracted mode of being, already present in Eliot's day, has come to predominate in the digital age. We're all familiar with the distracting nature of digital technology. And this is no accident. Media platforms monetize and compete for our attention. They're getting better and better at curating content that stimulates us and entertains us. And the result is a restless state of mind where we're constantly diverted by a myriad of transient and superficial stimuli. Our attention is shallowed and fragmented in the process, and our capacity and patience for sustained thought is degraded. The digital environment is conditioning us away from a mode of contemplative attention and toward a mode of reactive attention. We're being formed into distracted and shallow people. We have little room, little patience for silence, stillness, and sustained focus. The digital environment is distorting our reality. Today, we are spending less and less time experiencing the world as it is directly encountered in nature, and more time experiencing the world as it is digitally mediated through the glow of a screen. The digital world, through its saturation of images, is eroding the distinction in our minds between appearance and reality. The shadow is becoming the real. Representations are replacing reality so thoroughly that the distinction between true and false, real and simulated, is becoming increasingly hard to discern. In Plato's cave, the shadows are imitations of real things. In the digital cave, the shadows have become self-sufficient images without originals. Digital shadows, then, are not truly representations of the real at all. They are substitutes for it. And it's not just the being of nature that gets distorted through the mediation of the digital environment. Human persons and human relations mediated in the digital environment become mere shadows of themselves as well. Social media is a platform where we present carefully curated reflections of ourselves that often become more real than our actual lives. It's a place where face-to-face interaction is replaced with profile-to-profile interaction. Where Plato's prisoners mistook shadows for things, we now mistake ourselves for our digital shadows. The digital environment is detaining our wills. As noted already, whereas the chains in Plato's cave are made of metal links, the chains in the digital cave consist in the psychological links of habit and addiction. The digital environment is addictive by design. The purpose and the goal is to capture your attention and manipulate your behavior. Every tap, swipe, and scroll contributes to the formation of micro habits. Continuous feedback streams and dopamine feedback loops keep us coming back for more. Social dependence and fear of disconnection make us afraid to disengage. What appears as freedom, the endless ability to choose, scroll, express, becomes its opposite. Compulsion disguised as choice. We click voluntarily. But our desires have been conditioned and our attention pre-shaped. And the result is not overt domination, but rather a kind of self-administered captivity, where we become the agents of our own subjection through a kind of routine participation. In the digital cave, mere appearance, rather than real being, becomes the primary object of our experience. The digital environment increasingly presents us with merely apparent goods, shadowy imitations and copies of true goods. Thus, connection replaces friendship, information replaces wisdom, pleasure replaces happiness, choice replaces freedom, and virtue signaling replaces actual virtue. And perhaps most destructive of all is the way the digital environment distorts the truth about our own human nature. Since what is properly and fittingly good for us is grounded in and ordered by our nature, if we lose sight of the kind of beings that we are, we will lose sight of what our flourishing requires. The digital cave tends to obscure this teleological structure where natures order beings to their proper ends. And as a result, a profound metaphysical confusion has set in. Desire and preference replace nature as the source of normativity. Feeling replaces reason as the measure of goodness. Reason is overwhelmed by appetite. Human fulfillment is no longer seen as the actualization of our nature, but as the optimization of our desires. In the digital cave, the natural ends of human life, truth, goodness, friendship, beauty, contemplation, are replaced by the digital shadows of preference and pleasure and connectivity and entertainment and stimulation. Thanks to the incredibly rapid proliferation of technology across the globe, billions of humans now spend much of their lives in the digital cave. Many of them are chained. But there is hope. After all, the way out has already been shown to us by Plato. Liberation is by means of true education, or the turning of the soul towards the true and the good. We can regain our freedom when we turn away from the glow of the screen and toward the light of the real. From representation to nature. From distraction to contemplation. From the apparent good to the good itself. To the divine and natural order. To the unmediated source of intelligibility and value.